Shrink Wrap Radio Number 43, July 26, 2006, A Jungian Shaman. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
And one of the distinguishing thing between shamanism and Jungian work is that shamans talk a lot about honoring these energies and these spirits by ceremony and ritual. So it's more than just working with them. There are rituals and ceremonies to express gratitude for being in a world that contains such energies. Okay. And those rituals can involve sand paintings, as I mentioned, or fire ceremonies or meditations, ways to somehow connect and give gratitude and bring harmony to oneself and the universe in an interactive ceremonial process.
That was the voice of Dr. Carl Greer, a Jungian analyst who in recent years has trained to be a shaman at the Four Winds Society in Park City, Utah. In addition to all the reading and studying he's done there in Utah, he has also taken trips to Peru to learn from some of the indigenous shaman there. In addition to his work with clients in both Jungian and shamanic modes, he also teaches through the Four Winds Society. I was thrilled to meet Carl and get to spend time with him during my second visit to Park City to take a six-day training in advanced soul and destiny retrieval. Here's my interview with Carl. Okay, well, here we are in Park City, Utah, at the Canyons Resort, which at another time of year would be a ski resort, and I think would be quite wonderful in a very different way. It's really hot right now. It's been in the hundreds in this area. And I'm sitting in my room here with Carl Greer, who is a psychologist, a Jungian analyst, and more recently, a practitioner of shamanism and one of the trainers in the workshop that I'm attending here. And so I thought I'd take this opportunity to interview you and share you with my listening audience. Yes. So, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah. So, why don't we start off with you taking us through your very interesting career? Kind of just take us through the highlights of your education and how you got here.
Well, David, I was an engineering student as an undergraduate and graduated as a metallurgical engineer. Considered at that time going into the field of psychology and decided not to. Went to Columbia University instead and was in the Graduate School of Business where I got my doctorate. Was on the faculty there for 9 semesters.
Oh, really? So you got your doctorate
in finance and management.
Oh, in finance and management first. Wow.
Right. So then I taught there, lived in New York City with my wife and young daughter, then moved to Chicago when I had 9 months accrued off where I was still in the faculty in the payroll of Columbia, but I didn't have to teach. Went to work for an independent oil company and never went back. I stayed there and was a businessman for a number of years. Then in my early 40s, I became restive and not completely content with just being a businessman and decided I wanted to go back and become a Jungian analyst.
Mm-hmm. And that's just the time of life when Jungians predict that there might be some important life changes stirring.
Absolutely, and I was certainly a case study for that phenomenon.
Yeah.
I found out rather quickly that I didn't have any of the qualifications to become a Jungian analyst, and so I had to go back and do a lot of different things, including going into analysis and going back to graduate school, which I did. And over an 8-year process, because I was still involved in business, I got my degree in clinical psychology, my doctorate, and then applied to the institute and went there and became an analyst.
Okay. So that was a long process. You started on the Jungian analytic journey somewhere in your 40s, and it sounds like you might have been right around age 50 by the time you got out of that.
Really later than that. I was closer to my mid-50s because that whole process, or closer to 60, really.
Mm-hmm. Okay, see, everybody out there, it's never too late. And I'm very interested in the whole Jungian perspective, and that's something that we'll be talking about quite a bit, but then there's this newest chapter that opened up for you, which was shamanic work. Tell us a little bit about that, just how that came into your life.
Well, I'd always been interested, theoretically and in my head, about shamanism. The stories of the shamans, Castaneda and Hawaiian kahunas, and medicine, mm-hmm. men and women, always fascinated me.
Right.
But I thought it would be really impossible for me to go train and become a shaman because I had a wife, responsibilities, children. And then I read Alberto Villalto's book, Shaman, Healer, Sage, and it indicated that it was possible to train several weeks a year and kind of fit it into your life. And so that's what I did. I started that training, and I think there was a bit of a culture shock initially from the training that I had in traditional psychology and Jungian analysis, but
that's what I'm going through now. We're at the Four Winds Society right now. I'm at the entry point, and I'm going through a little culture shock.
But I came out the other side of it, and I hope you do too, because I saw a lot of compatibility in amplification and enhancement of some of the things that I've been thinking about and doing. And so I continued with that training process. I spent a few trips for several years in Peru, and this has really become a very important, transformative part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And now I would say the healing work that I do, the energy work that I do, is really more, both time-wise and importance to me, than the work I do as a psychologist and as an analyst.
That's really interesting. So you, in fact, have a practice now,
yes.
a clinical practice, and is it mixed? I mean, are some people you're doing shamanic work with, some people you're doing Jungian work, or do you have two separate locations and kind of two different personas?
I have two separate clienteles for the most part.
Okay.
And I see them in the same location. And to my persona, I would like to think from a Jungian perspective that it reflects who I am in both situations. And it's relatively the same, although my role as a shaman has different aspects, obviously, than my role as a Jungian analyst.
Yeah. And by the way, since this is, I was going to say radio, I don't know what to call it. It's podcasting, it's radio, it's the internet, and not TV. You don't have the benefit of seeing Carl as I do. And he's not dressed up in feathers or a strange costume, but rather regular looking guy in a plaid shirt, jeans. And so let's talk a little bit about Jungian psychology and how it relates to shamanism. For example, there's the whole area of archetypes. So, well, I'll just kind of let you I'll let you have your head on this issue. Talk to us about the Jungian background and how it fits for you with the shamanic theories.
Well, Jung developed a psychology in part out of his own life experiences, but I think he tapped into some universals that, as he's explicated them, have been of benefit to people in many different
mm-hmm.
fields.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those universals was the idea that we are coexisting with a realm of what he would call the collective unconscious that has energies in it that from time to time manifest themselves in our lives through images, dreams, symbols. And working with that realm, Jung has felt, has helped people resolve various psychological issues that he would say at core often have a spiritual dimension.
Mm-hmm.
So by working from the realm of the collective unconscious, which is related to spirit, he would argue, allows one to get in better harmony and sync with the spirit world and those forces that affect us. And that's very similar to the shamanic idea of Aini.
Aini. What is that word?
A-Y-N-I.
Okay.
It has to do with right relationship.
Uh-huh.
My tradition is the Peruvian Inca shaman tradition, and so
okay.
the Quechua language is that which is spoken by the Inca shamans. And the idea of Aini is right relationship, as I said, at the external world level and at the inner world level. So what is it? Harmony, reciprocity. And in a way, that's a Jungian idea of trying to be in right relationship with the various parts of one's personality. You know, the ego, the self, the persona, the shadow, the inner masculine, inner feminine,
right,
and the whole world of the collective unconscious.
Yes.
Now, shamanism has some technologies for delving into those realms, which are related to, similar, but often, in some cases, different than the than what I know to do as a Jungian analyst. I would say a common theme is to somehow relate to these realms as an other, and as an other try to establish dialogue and communication with those realms so that there can be achieved this new relationship to the dialogue that involves greater harmonization that can contribute to psychological well-being that's not there in its absence.
Right. You know, you were talking about Jung, and it brought to mind that he had a very, at least on one occasion and for a prolonged period of time, he had a very profound experience of the unconscious, where it was kind of breaking through into his life in a way that was sufficiently disruptive that for a while he really needed to withdraw from the world and produce some rather marvelous paintings and other things during that period. And I'm aware that we've been going through various processes and ceremonies and rituals here as tools, or as you said, technologies to try to help us get into those realms. So it seems to me there's a crossover there between Jung and shamanism, that Jung had this spontaneous experience for which he didn't have a lot of maps, so he kind of invented his own set of maps, giving us these concepts like the archetypes and the shadow and the persona and trickster, hero, all of these others. And it seems to me that there are, maybe that what you were talking about, the spirits, the spirit world, do you see that as being, is that a different map, would you say, a different map, a different vocabulary, maybe for talking about the same thing, or might one talk about spirits or archetypes and have them be pretty much the same thing, or do you see it different?
I think there is, my own metaphysical belief system is that there is a source that manifests itself in many ways. And if you think about quantum physics as involving a lot of energies, including subatomic particles and different frequencies and different vibrations, I think as you go from, we humans, which are kind of congealed energy, to the most high vibrations in the universe, which may be in dark holes or dark matter, dark space, I think these energies do exist. I think they do interact with us in a way that we shamans, I think Jungians in a sense would believe we can interact back with. And I think that's what happened to Jung. His retreat into himself occurred after his break with Freud. He was the heir apparent. They had a falling out over some theoretical issues. And then Jung, in order to make sense of his life at that time, given this big break with the then master of psychoanalysis, retreated into himself. And he had a lot of unconscious eruptions that I think manifested in terms of moods and thoughts and feelings that he somehow concretized by his art. You pointed out he did paintings, he did sculpture, he played. And somehow he gave form to these images, and as such he could relate to them in ways that he could digest and metabolize and make meaning of in his life. Shamans do much the same thing. Jungians will, as a technique, use something called the santre. They'll use active imagination to give form to unconscious contents. Shamans will do sand paintings. You mentioned ceremony and ritual earlier, David, and one of the a distinguishing thing between shamanism and Jungian work is that shamans talk a lot about honoring these energies and these spirits by ceremony and ritual. So it's more than just working with them. They're rituals and ceremonies to express gratitude mm-hmm. for being in a world that contains such energies. Okay. And those rituals can involve sand paintings, as I mentioned, or fire ceremonies, or meditations, ways to somehow connect and give gratitude and bring harmony to oneself mm-hmm. and the universe in an interactive mm-hmm. ceremonial process. Mm-hmm.
And in my experience, that's not altogether separate from the way that Jungians approach it, because I know sometimes Jungians have talked about, well, you need to honor the symptoms, where other therapeutic approaches might feel like, well, you got to get rid of this thing in your personality, yes. just totally rid yourself of it. The yes. Jungians often don't take that position, right?
Yes, that's very true. And in that sense, there is that honoring. The way in which it's honored may be through not seeing it as a bad thing, as you're mm-hmm. saying, but as a messenger of the gods, gods mm-hmm. so-called, because it represents these forces that are very numinous mm-hmm. And powerful. The honoring may involve just giving voice and expression to mm-hmm. them.
Or, as you said earlier, coming into right relationship
yes.
with that part of oneself instead of being in an oppositional relationship.
Absolutely.
Perhaps just saying, well, this is a piece of my nature, or this is a piece of the way, you know, my personality was thrown when they rolled the dice. And
yes. Mm-hmm. And the Jungian viewpoint is that when our conscious adaptation to life fails, then there's something set up in the unconscious to try to compensate for that and to rectify it. And so you have this dialectic and this tension between the conscious adaptation, which isn't working so much anymore, the unconscious, which is trying to come into a new balance. And there is a wait. There's kind of a liminality. There's a waiting for a third position. And that usually comes about in Jungian work through the emergence of what's called the transcendent function. And that can be manifested in a symbol, a spontaneous symbol, or a dream symbol mm-hmm. that somehow reconciles. It's not a compromise between the unconscious and the conscious, but it really is a third position, mm-hmm. a new position mm-hmm. that has elements of both the old mm-hmm. and the new. Mm-hmm. And then that becomes the new conscious adaptation. And then at some point when that doesn't work any longer, there will be this upsurge of unconscious compensation yeah. again for the emergence of a new transcendent function, which is, that process is one that shamans are continually involved with, that the world is constantly changing as we change our percepts and as we change in it. And so one of the elegant ways of living life is to somehow be able to self-correct and regain balance, much like Jungians would talk about process of individuation.
Okay. Now, let's say somebody comes to see you in distress. Do you need to then kind of decide which hat you're going to put on, whether or not you're going to see them to do some kind of a Jungian therapy or to do shamanic work? Does that happen where you make that decision?
Yes, although more frequently people come knowing that I do shamanic work and would ask for shamanic work.
And so that's what you would do with them.
And that's what I would do.
Okay.
And sometimes the models and the paradigms, just in terms of the frequency of visits and so forth, mm-hmm. are different. My shamanic work, I may work with somebody for 2.5 hours, and then I might not see them again for a few weeks or a month. Whereas as an analyst, I would see them more frequently, but for a lesser period of time.
Okay.
At this point in my interview with Carl Greer, dear listeners, I discovered when I returned to California that my recorder had stopped, and I had only half an interview. I think what happened is that the memory card was full because I forgot to delete a prior interview. I had been interviewing Carl without notes, so I don't even know what questions I asked in the lost part of the interview. However, he was kind enough to let me ask him a few more questions via a phone call. So that will account for the different quality you'll hear in the second part of this interview. Also, don't go scrambling for your cell phone when you hear the ring. It's my cell phone that I forgot to turn off. Moreover, you may notice that my first question in this next part is pretty much a repeat, but his answer was different enough that I didn't want to discard it. Now, here's the rest of the interview, ringing, cell phone, and all. Carl, do you have any sense of when a shamanic approach versus a Jungian approach is called for? I guess what I'm asking is if you have a sense of differential diagnosis and which tools are appropriate for which sorts of conditions?
I think the analytic approach for me would be used where I felt the client needed more containing and more frequent visits. My shamanic practice, I don't see people on a weekly basis generally, and it's maybe 3 to 8 or 9 sessions total with space in between.
Okay.
The types of problems that I deal with are often very similar. Mm-hmm. And Jung at one time had said that all, in his opinion, psychological problems have a spiritual component. And I think that would certainly be true of the kinds of issues that people come to me with, both for shamanic or analytic work.
Okay. Now, speaking of that other Carl Jung, this may be a bit of a stretch, but if Carl Jung were alive and you could discuss it with him, what do you think his reaction would be when you tell him that you're a shaman?
Well, I would think that he would think that that he himself did certain things that one could call shamanistic, as well as the people who he trained and the institutes around the world trained to be Jungian analysts, mm-hmm. because both would share a shamans and analysts, Jungian analysts, a belief in an unseen, unconscious world that if one can relate to it in a more effective, reciprocal way, good things happen. The techniques are a little bit different, shamanistic versus Jungian, mm-hmm. but I think the underlying belief system is quite similar and quite compatible.
You know, I'm recalling that he went on safari to Africa. I saw a film clip of him in Africa, and I imagine he must have been very interested in what the African shaman or medicine people were doing. Do you know anything about that?
I know he had some extremely vitalizing for him experiences in nature, mm-hmm. where he was seeing things that he imagined were like the first time the scene that he saw had been seen, and in some way by seeing it, giving it life. And I also understand that he had some harrowing adventures in leaving where he was in Africa. So I think for him it was a very numinous time.
Right, right. And he seemed to have almost a naturally, to have a kind of what might be called an animistic view of the world. You're calling that to mind as you talk about how close he felt to nature. And I'm remembering the story in his book on Memories, Dreams, and Reflections about sitting on a stone and kind of feeling that the stone was alive and not knowing whether he was the stone or vice versa.
Exactly. I mean, he had the idea of the participational mystique. I may not be saying that correctly, but the idea is that we have a oneness with things.
Yeah, and that's really kind of at the heart of the shamanistic approach, I think.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, yeah. Now, some people I've spoken to about shamanism get upset about what they see as white people once again ripping off the intellectual property of indigenous peoples. What's your response to that charge?
Well, I think perhaps in some cases that's true. In the case of my tradition, the shamans themselves have wanted the word to be spread. And they feel that the world desperately needs the message. They are very happy to have been sharing it with my mentor and people like myself.
Okay. Earlier you mentioned that the shamanic work has had a tremendous impact on your personal life. How so?
I think more than some of the other trainings that I have, David, it's made me become more solid interiorly. I think I'm more my own person and thereby less reactive to life. I'm a little bit more still than I would have otherwise been, and that's just reflected itself in really all my relationships out in the world and also with myself.
Mm-hmm. And along the same line, what's been the impact of shamanism on your sense of your own spirituality?
I think it's become more real for me. I was always a part of organized religion and had some, I think, connection to spirit through that. It was very important to me. But this has deepened my spirituality in that I feel I have a more encompassing spiritual life that involves nature in ways that it didn't before, and involves ceremony and ritual to give gratitude in ways that I didn't practice before.
Okay. Just wrap things up now, Carl. I'm wondering if there are one or two books on either Jung or shamanism that you'd like to recommend to our listeners.
Well, two books which were, I think, important to me in the shamanistic realm were by Alberto Villoldo, my mentor. One is Shaman, Healer, Sage. And the other one is something to do with mending the past, healing the future, something that you might be able to check in that book, David.
Okay.
I think you're familiar with it.
Okay.
And it's the book that deals with soul retrieval and destiny retrieval.
Right.
And a good exposition of Jung's ideas that I like is a book by Murray Stein called Jung's Map of the Soul.
Okay. Well, Carl, I really want to thank you for being willing to share with me and my listeners here on Shrink Wrap Radio. I will continue to be exploring shamanism on my own and with you people at the Four Winds Society, and I'm looking forward with eagerness to the future.
Well, my pleasure to participate, David.
Okay.
Best to you.
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed this interview with Dr. Carl Greer. Let me give you some of my own 30,000-foot overview of shamanism as I understand it at this point. First of all, it involves a cosmology in which there are three worlds or planes of existence. I gather this division tends to be fairly universal, regardless of whether you're talking about the shamanic practices derived from the Incas, the North American Indians, or those from other parts of the world. These three worlds or planes of existence can be described as the lower world, the middle world, and the upper world. The lower world is associated with Earth and in many ways could be linked to Freud's notion of the unconscious as well as to Jung's idea of the darker side of the personal and collective unconscious. The middle world is this world of everyday reality that presumably you and I are occupying at this moment. The upper world refers to a higher plane of existence, to what one might call the God level, and may overlap to some degree with Jung's ideas about the bright shadow and the spiritual aspects of the collective unconscious. In the cosmology of the shaman, there are spirits, gods, and guides, and these are entities that the shaman is able to communicate and interact with. From a Jungian perspective, these would probably be seen as archetypes. Do these archetypes exist in our unconscious, and do we then project them outward? Or do these archetypes in fact have some existence outside of us? It's my impression that Jungians might be divided on this point. For myself, I'm not even sure if inside/outside is a useful distinction anymore when it comes to consciousness. The shaman, like those who study the new physics, believe that time is an artifact of the middle world of ordinary consciousness. By changing his or her state of consciousness, the shaman experiences moving into a realm in which everything is present, including what we normally think of as the past and the future. So the shaman has the experience of being able to travel backward and forward in time. In Aboriginal societies, the shaman's ability to know where the game animals would be or where the fishing would be good was critical to the survival of the tribe. The ability to go into an altered state of consciousness is a fairly universal aspect of the shamanic approach, regardless of region of the world where it originated. Shamans have evolved a variety of approaches to shifting their level of consciousness, including prolonged sessions of drumming, rattling, chanting, singing, dancing, praying, and/or the use of mind-altering botanical substances. Rituals and rites may also have the effect of altering consciousness. Once having entered an altered state, journeying, tracking, and intention become key elements. The shaman uses journeying to enter into the imaginal lower or upper world to bring back information and gifts that will be useful to his or her client or tribe. Similarly, the shaman uses tracking to move backward or forward in time to find the cause of a situation and or its resolution. The manipulation of energies that are conventionally unseen plays an important role in the shamanic approach to healing and causality. For example, energy centers or chakras are likely to play an important role. Recall our recent episode on Tai Chi and Qigong with Dr. Michael Mayer and his conviction based on 30 years of study that all these Asian martial arts and healing systems have their roots in early shamanism. Finally, from my own point of view as a psychologist, I have to think that belief and expectation play a major role. Have you ever had the experience of going to the doctor and when he asks you to point to where it hurts, you can't find it? I know I've had that experience. I grew up within the paradigm of Western medicine. To me, the doctor is the shaman. He knows the secret practices, the mumbo-jumbo of modern medicine, and he has the appropriate rituals that I grew up believing in, such as listening to my heart with a stethoscope, taking my blood pressure, getting blood tests, and so on. And he or she is wearing the white lab coat and has all those degrees hanging on the wall. All of this creates within me an expectation of getting some healing. Even when they tell us that antibiotics are no good against a cold or virus, most of us still go running to the doctor, begging for antibiotics at the first sign of a sniffle or a scratchy throat. Of course, we're living in a time of paradigm shift, and for many, the Western medicine mojo has lost its luster. So they may seek approaches that are more clearly rooted in the old ways, such as the indigenous medicine way. So I think set and setting and expectation and belief system play an important role in healing, whether modern Western or shamanic. But I'm not writing it all off as placebo effect. First of all, when it comes to healing, I think placebo effect is a good thing, not a bad thing. We should do everything we can to heighten it. Beyond the placebo effect, we know that certain pharmaceuticals have fairly predictable, specific effects. Similarly, I'm guessing that shamanic interventions in the hands of gifted and trained individuals probably have specific effects that go beyond the placebo. At any rate, I'm going to hazard a prediction that the acceptance of shamanic practices will be on the rise. Currently, there are no licensing boards or standards committees for shamanic practitioners. It's not inconceivable to me that this could arise, however. As more and more people feel drawn to become trained as shaman, and as their clientele grows, it's likely that there will be a call for some minimum standards of training and supervision. This is what has happened in other helping professions, and it strikes me as a likely development for shamanism as it moves into an increasingly accepted contemporary incarnation.
You want to learn about the inside and what makes us tick? You could find all the answers you need real quick. Get on the couch with Dr. Dave. Leave your worries behind. It'll all be fine. It's Shrink Wrap Radio. It's all in your mind. For insight into personal growth and the inner life, hear Shrink Wrap Radio with Dr. Dave.
Hey, if you've been thinking about purchasing a domain name, you can get it for $6.95 instead of $8.95 by going to GoDaddy.com and using the discount code SHRINK3 at checkout. That's SHRINK and the numeral 3. You'll find other money-saving discounts for GoDaddy on our website at ShrinkWrapRadio.com. Or how about a freebie? If you add yourself to our Frapper map, you'll be eligible to win a random drawing at the end of this year for a signed copy of my book, This is the Zodiac Speaking, Into the Mind of a Serial Killer, in which I profile a notorious serial killer. You'll find a link to Frapper at shrinkwrapradio.com, and it will let you put a push pin on a map of the world showing us where you live. We have four more potential winners. Al in Mount Horeb, Wisconsin, Minka in Santa Barbara, California, Chris in West Kirby, UK, and Morgan in Dallas, Texas. And once again, let me remind you of my upcoming workshop in Tuscany, Italy. It'll be a week-long personal growth workshop that I'm co-leading with Dr. Ron Alexander, and it's in a beautiful Tuscan retreat center. Now, those of you who are already in Europe, it's really an easy trip for you. September is a great time of year to be there. Once again, the dates are September 18 to 24, and we've got room for a total of about 8 to 15 people, and there's still room available. Drop me an email right away if you're interested and would like more information. As I've said before, if you like Shrink Wrap Radio, you'll love this workshop.
Hi, my name is Judy from County Cork, and you're on the couch with Dr. Dave.
Now that's what I'm talking about. I'd sure like to see more of you record a little transition like that and send it to me. You can do it right on our site using MyChingo, or you can send me an MP3 file or leave it as a message on Skype. Now let's dip into our mail. First, we hear from Martin in the UK, who writes, "Hi, Dr. Dave. Two amazing books on Tarot, Shaman, Genetics, and Jungian Archetypes are The Inner Guide Meditation by Ed Steinbrecher and The Cosmic Serpent by Jeremy Narby. Both incredible reads. Look forward to hearing you analyze them. Great shows. Martin." Well, Martin, I haven't read them, and I've got quite a long list of books to read, particularly as I prepare for these shows, so it may be a while before I get to them, but I will try to get around to taking a look at those two books that you recommend. Okay, next we hear from Lauren, who writes, "Hi, Dr. Dave. I'm a former psych major, and I still have a considerable interest in the field. I've really enjoyed listening to most of your podcast episodes, but I have one wish. It seems that an overwhelming number of your podcasts are on altered states or dreams. These are interesting subjects, but I wish you would take a few episodes to discuss issues and practices in other areas. For instance, I'm fascinated with abnormal psychology, and I would love to hear about new information on schizophrenia or bipolar disorder. I also have felt that certain episodes were decidedly hostile to people who adhere to religious beliefs. For instance, one guest remarked that during life, intelligent people either stop believing in God or live two lives, one on Sunday, where they lose their normal common sense, and the other in the real, rational world. I know of many incredibly intelligent people who find it no trouble at all to reconcile new scientific findings with their faith, and I am one myself. I would almost go so far as to say I felt attacked by your guest's comments, as well as your response, even though neither of you know me personally. I feel that your open-mindedness and self-professed omnitheism does not square with your derogatory treatment of religion in certain statements. I hope that you will take my statements and evaluate them honestly, and I trust that you will because of your training in psychology. I wouldn't be surprised if a normal person dismissed comments such as mine immediately, but I do hope you can try and think them over. Thanks for the enjoyable podcasting." Well, Lauren, I want to thank you for that balanced assessment. I appreciate your sharing the critique with me and yet still being able to express some support. So I will try to be mindful of your concern. I can't always take responsibility for my guests' views. I want them to feel free to speak out whatever their views are. And I do have some biases of my own, but I will try to express them in a considerate way. And yes, we will definitely have shows in the future that focus on various aspects of abnormal psychology. By the way, Lauren, your return address suggests that you are either currently or at some time in the past were at a Christian college in Illinois, Wheaton College in Wheaton, Illinois. And you might be interested to know that a long time ago, I had a partial scholarship to attend Wheaton. Well, that's pretty much our show for today. Send your email to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. My username on Skype is ShrinkPod. I'm looking for some My Chingo messages. All you need is a microphone hooked up to your computer. There's no cost to you or to me, and sharing your voice is a great way to build this community. You'll see a bright green My Chingo logo on the left side of each of the Shrink Wrap Radio pages. Just click on that, and the rest will become self-evident. It's very simple to use. I got a good one this past week from Josh C. in California. I was able to hear it, Josh, but I had a glitch when I tried to download it, so I can't play it on the show today. You can record a comment or a question, or you can record one of those little transitions I like to use along the lines of, "Hi, this is Maria from Quito, Ecuador, and you're on the couch with Dr. Dave." Speaking of Quito, Ecuador, I haven't heard from a single listener in Mexico or South America. If you're in Mexico or South America, please add yourself to our Frapper map, and let's hear from you. I want to remind you that there's now another way to access Shrink Wrap Radio. You can do so by going to shrinkwrapradio.podshow.com. The Podshow site has a number of features designed to help you subscribe to your favorite podcasts. Please help spread the word about Shrink Wrap Radio to your friends and colleagues. If you have a podcast, a blog, a MySpace, or a LinkedIn page, we'd sure like a plug. You may have noticed our new promo in the feed, and feel free to use that or to play it. I'm still looking for more endorsements on the iTunes recommendations page, but what I heard from Josh C. in his My Chingo message to me is that you have to be signed up with the iTunes Music Store in order to leave a recommendation. So if you are signed up with the iTunes Music Store, or if you want to get signed up with the iTunes Music Store, then I'd sure appreciate a recommendation there. So thanks again to Dr. Carl Greer for today's interview. The interview for our next show is already recorded, and I'll be bringing it out sooner than normal. That show will feature Judith E. Glazer, top business consultant and author of the new book, The DNA of Leadership. Our closing PodSafe music selection today is a rousing gospel number by podcaster P.W. Fenton titled Above the Clouds. You'll find a link to it in our show notes. That's it for now. This is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.
Feeling all alone, and there's no one waiting for you. When you get home, even though it's raining and it's gray all around, up there above the clouds, the sun's still shining down. Sometimes it feels like you won't survive, like you're lost at sea, watching for that ship to arrive. Even though it's raining and the blues are all around, up there above the clouds, the sun's still shining down on me. The sun's still shining down.
Hey, this is Matt Van Nuys, and you're on the couch with my dad, Dr. Dave.